Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm John Purcell, and I'm sitting across from Philippa McGuinness, who's come to talk about the year everything changed, 2001. I am also joined by Robert O'Hearn, and we will be discussing the book and all that happened in 2001, Philippa. It's an interesting year, 2001. It's kind of far away, but to my mind, yesterday. Is that how it feels for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of liberating to write something that is history, but not quite, because we all remember it, or we think we remember it. So, to me, it feels too recent to be history. But at the same time, you look back and you think, and I found this as I was writing and researching, things really have changed in ways that we couldn't have predicted then.
Because in the intro, you sort of talk about did things actually change? Do we actually change from these kind of moments? One of the biggest moments in 2001 that we all remember, that you know that when you talk to other people that there are things that people remember about 2001?
9/11 is the big one. So it's really been so interesting for me that when people say, oh, what year are you doing again? And I say 2001, and they'll immediately go, 9/11, I remember exactly where I was. You know, I was at home, and a lot of people seem to be watching the West Wing, and all of a sudden it cut to New York, and there was confusion and disbelief from viewers in Australia. I happened to be in Singapore. We were living there at the time. So I watched it live. You know, I had the TV on around 9 and thought that I was watching a trailer or something. I couldn't believe it. So 9/11, I think, is the big one. Then Tampa is something that people remember, even if they don't remember exactly what happened, you know, where the small boat came from and where the asylum seekers ended up. What they remember is the mood of those weeks after Tampa, leading up to the election that John Howard won when nobody thought he would win. So they're probably the two big things people remember. And then, of course, going to war in Afghanistan and the Taliban and George W. Bush and all the language he used. But I've been really interested in the number of people who've said to me, was that the year Moulin Rouge came out? And it was, and I was pretty pleased about that because it gave me a chance to write about Nicole Kidman because it was the year she broke up with Tom. So I thought, well, I can really, you know, get a lot of Nicole mileage, out of that. So yeah, you know, it was a year when a lot happened. The launch of Wikipedia was something I didn't know about when I started writing the book, and I remember stumbling across it and thinking, oh my God, that's so exciting. Now I can write about Wikipedia. I did know when I signed the contract that it was the year the iPod launched. So I had quite a lot of fun writing about that.
So when you said you signed the contract, so you had this idea for a book, and you hadn't even worked out just how much had happened in 2001 until you actually started writing, is that what?
Yeah, I'd worked out quite a bit, so I knew I had enough for a book.
Mm-hmm. We have enough just with September 11.
I mean, how many books have been written about, you know, September 11 alone?
You talk about that moment, and so many times in movies, that moment is part of the movie.
Yeah, it's
like
true.
People suddenly see it on TV. And,
yeah.
Honey, come and have a look at this.
Yeah. So, yeah, there would be enough for many, many, many books. No, I had a bit of an idea. I don't want to, you know, malign myself or my publisher for, you know, signing a contract without being fully briefed. But I said, well, I'm launching into the research. I don't know what I'll find. Mm. So, you know, one other thing that I hadn't really grasped when I signed the contract were the number of corporate collapses that year. So HIH collapsed. And I think even now that was Australia's biggest ever corporate collapsed. Ansett collapsed. And to be honest, one of the parts of research and writing I most enjoyed was talking to former Ansett flight attendants and pilots. They were just amazing. So there's a whole book that could come out of that, I reckon, because they just loved their employer.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never heard anything like it. People talked about the Ansett family, and I thought, well, it just must be the people I happen to be talking about. They feel really strongly about it. But everyone talked about the Ansett family, and they still all get together.
Is there a part of 2001 which is pre and post? Are there two 2001s you're writing about?
Yeah, 9/11, I think, would be the turning point. And people say automatically without thinking, oh, yeah, everything changed after 9/11. And I was a little bit sceptical about that. I was thinking, really? But actually, yes, everything did, because it gave rise to so many other things that now we take for granted,
like
for
all
better
the,
or worse.
The way in which politics has changed, the way the security has changed.
Yeah.
But it was Ansett before or after?
You couldn't make this up. Like, seriously, if it were a novel, people would go, oh, as if. It was essentially the same day.
Ah.
So when John Howard was in Washington, D.C. on the morning of September 11, before the planes hit the Pentagon or the Twin Towers, the journalists wanted to talk to him about Ansett and about Tampa, because the federal court the night before had handed down a decision saying that the asylum seekers should be allowed to get off the boat and land on Australian soil. And in the end, that was overturned on appeal. But that morning, Ansett and Tampa was what everybody thought was the news. That was going to be it. And then, you know, the events of the day unfold and everything changes.
There's also within the book a personal element. You say in the intro that, you know, I'm not a journalist, I'm not a historian, I'm not this. You list this whole list of things you're not.
Yeah.
But you are, you know, that you're going to give it your good go and go into this.
Yeah.
And you open the book and end the book with this personal element, which is just devastating. And 2001. Is a major year for you and your family for another reason. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, well, again, you know, when you look at the dates, if you were to put it in a novel, you would hardly believe it. But we buried our son Daniel, who was stillborn, on New Year's Eve, so on the last day of 2001. Had stopped moving just a couple of days before, and everything had been going fine. I was at term. There was no reason to believe that we wouldn't have a new baby boy, you know, by the time 2001 was out or early in 2002. But it wasn't to be. And when the idea of writing about 2001 popped into my head. I was thinking about things like 9/11 and all the events we've talked about now. And then I thought, oh, my God, that was the year Daniel died. I mean, not that I don't think about it every day. I do, but I don't always attach it to, you know, a particular year in my mind as a matter of course. And I guess I thought, well, you know, it was a year when the world suffered a lot of grief and loss, as you know, we do every single year. But I thought, well, I can write about my experience against all that as well. So it was the first time that I've written about it. You know, sitting here talking about it, that's the first, you know, this is really one of the first times I've talked about Daniel and the impact it had on his death had on me and on our family. But I'm I feel really honoured, actually, to have a kind of a platform where I can talk about that, because stillbirth is really common. Like, in that moment, I thought, I've never heard of this happening, you know, to anyone I know. I'll be the only person, you know, in my life to whom this ever happens, and that's good. But it's actually really common. 6 babies a day in Australia, and people don't realise. So it's, you know, hard to talk about it, but I really welcome the opportunity to talk about it and to write about it. Like, catharsis is an overused word, but when I wrote that chapter, something kind of lifted.
It seems to me that chapter is, I was reading it going, as a writer going, God, how did you write this? And the way in which you, you go through it detail by detail, the writer comes to the fore in that scene, but it doesn't lack any of its impact. I mean, for me, that part it really gives something else to this book, and about time, and about love, and about loss, about how we can't turn back, and how these things happen outside of our. So it's like it ties in with the poor people in the building. It just happened to them. They're just doing their normal morning stuff in an office, and suddenly this happens. Everything, all the doctors were fine. Yeah. You were fine. Everyone's fine. Everyone's acting normal. And this happens. It sort of all ties into this kind of sense of, we can do stuff. We're not completely, blown hither and there.
Yeah.
But, these things, this is the world we live in. This is how life works.
Yeah. I think that's true. And it's hard to, for, you know, anyone to come to terms with how random things can be, and how dependent on chance. Having said that, most of the time babies are born, planes don't fly into tall buildings. I wanted to finish the book, and it's absolutely heartfelt. It's what I think, that by saying, well, actually, this is a really good time to be alive. You know, we're the most privileged, wealthy bunch of people, you know, here in Australia, and many, obviously not all parts of the world, certainly not Afghanistan, but, or elsewhere in the Middle East, but we're very privileged. I didn't want to lose sight of that, because, you know, to me, I don't want to sound all Pollyanna-ish, but I think that puts more pressure on us to think about these things and take steps and pursue policies and, you know, be open and tolerant to each other. They're all the lessons of 2001.
Also, we've got a bulwark against the fear politics.
Absolutely.
And this is what we've got to fight against.
Yeah.
That was September 11 just ushered in fear politics into the Western world, into the United States. We end up with Trump.
Yeah.
You know, as a direct result.
Yeah, exactly. Fear, it's insidious, and it's really destructive, and it serves no one except politicians very often, who are able to manipulate it.
And a few soulless corporations to be able to make some money out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one of the big changes since 2001, that we became more fearful about everything. You know, the idea that you would ever have got onto a plane or been in a public space, not that terrorism was invented in 2001, it obviously existed before, but you know, to us in the West, it started to seem much more real. And it was, you know, with good reason. Mm. But, thankfully, the number of attacks on American soil and here have been lower than anyone would think, when you get sucked up in the rhetoric of
It's like it's happening every day in the rhetoric.
Yeah, yeah, like every hour of every day, we're all in constant danger all the time, and we're not.
So, I'm sorry.
There was one of the things that struck me was that a lot of the events in 2001 were events that knocked people into a sense of we've lost control. We normally have control.
Yeah.
Normally these things can't touch us. We have some way of stopping these things happening. We better put things in place straight away so that things stop happening. So Tampa is a great example
Absolutely.
As well as the 9/11 thing. But it happens in people's personal lives as well. It's interesting with your book, the personal makes the strength of the whole book, because if you just catalogue events in the wider world, the wider politics, we sort of know we have limited control over those things. When things happen to you personally, you sort of reach out to control and have some sense of making sense.
Yeah, it's true. It's a kind of paradox, isn't it? You know, that I'd hate, as a result of these kind of large-scale things, for people to become more introspective, thinking, well, I'm just going to focus on my own life because that's all I can control. Because, in fact, one of the lessons, if there are lessons of 2001, is that we really need to pay attention to what governments are doing, very often in our name and with our taxes. It is that paradox of feeling like everything in the big wide world is chaotic and out of control, and we can only control our own lives, but it cuts both ways.
We've talked about a lot of the bad things in 2001. Did anything good happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I think lots of really good things happened, you know, and I'm not just saying this because at one point I thought, oh, this book is so miserable, you know, nobody's going to read it. But like the iPod, I think is huge. You know, it really changed the way we listen to music, you know. So you've got Steve Jobs standing up going 1,000 songs in your pocket, and now you think, only 1,000, really? But it was the forerunner of the iPhone. You know, it really was, and I think that smartphones, again, for better and worse, nothing is uniformly good or bad, have changed things, I think, for the better. You know, like we're more connected. We're probably more distracted, but, you know, that's a good thing. There were some really great movies and books in 2001. Well, Moulin Rouge is, you know, one of the big ones. And, you know, a lot of people who know me would be rolling their eyes now as they think I'm about to launch into Nicole time, because I'm Team Nicole. I think she's amazing. She also made The Others that year, which is a really, I think, a really great, like, super creepy film, but it's a really good film. And she filmed The Hours that year, which was
so very
released.
Much a good year for
Nicole. Very good year for Nicole. Plus, she had a number one hit single with Robbie Williams. You know, they did the cover of that Nancy Sinatra. Yeah.
The James Bondy one.
Yeah. And that was just so cool and sexy and great. I don't know if you're into music. I'm really into music. And The Strokes put out their record in 2001. And it was just like this really raw, straight out of New York rock and roll. And I remember hearing that and thinking, oh, how good is that? So, you know, there's all kinds of really cool pop culture stuff. And I don't know if Jonathan Franzen would like to hear, you know, himself referenced in a pop culture context, but The Corrections came out that year, and you know, that's a pretty interesting book, very much of that moment, I reckon. So there were good things. Wikipedia, I think, has probably been a force for good.
It really
has. And you know, we were on this upward trajectory of prosperity, you know, in that year. Everyone at the start of the year especially was freaking out that we were going to enter recession. You know, it was all like panic about, you know, our ride has come to an end. We're going to go into recession. The rest of the world is going into recession. Australia will go into recession. And miraculously, we didn't. We had no recession, which made us an absolute outlier in the world. And we still, touch wood, have not had a recession. So just if you think about money in people's pockets, you know, that's a good news story. Although inequality did start going up.
I'll just throw
that in. So there's a doubleness, everything.
Because Bush started to undo stuff in the US as well, other countries turned their heads, and also offshore, putting money offshore and different.
Yeah, absolutely. Bush was catastrophic.
Yeah, for that side.
You know, now people look at Trump and they say, well, maybe George W. Bush wasn't so bad. I'm here to tell you, he was.
Well, he undid so much in that period.
He really
about
did.
Human rights, about the economy. So many things banged backwards in that period.
Yeah, they really did.
And because there was two goes, he sort of became the norm.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And then he handed Obama the wonderful America. Fix this, buddy.
Yeah. And, you know, well, that's another story, isn't it?
Another book.
Yeah.
Fire up. Milipa, thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thank you. I've really enjoyed it. Thank you. Thanks.
You can get hold of The Year That Changed Everything 2001 at booktopia.com.au right now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.